Welcome to Calling It Out, the podcast that is dedicated to getting curious about our thinking, feeling and behaviour, and dedicated to learning how to make life easier for ourselves and freeing ourselves from distress. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 10. This week I am delighted and privileged to say that I'm going to be joined by Casey. I have wanted to invite Casey onto the episode for quite some time. Casey's experience is quite unique when it comes to the recovery process, and I think there's so much that we can learn from just listening to her and her journey. And although you mightn't be able to relate to all aspects of her journey, I think there's so much that we can take from the episode and learn. I am thrilled to say that I have an incredibly special guest with me today for this episode. I'm going to be joined by Casey today, and there are so many reasons that I wanted to invite Casey on for today's episode, but the main things that really come to mind is, again, I'm looking for different words all the time than journey and story and everything like that, but having worked with Casey, having had the privilege to work with Casey over the last few years, I myself, both personally and professionally, have learned so much. But speaking with Casey, I just knew by inviting her onto the episode, you will come away with a sense of hope, I think inspiration for resilience, and I think even practically a sense of, like, no matter what challenges that you're experiencing, there's always ways to make it easier and support ourselves. And I just think you have a wicked sense of humour as well, Casey. So I'm looking forward to people hearing that as well. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Yeah, I'm really, really grateful for you giving your time and energy. And it's technically your first day of your week's holiday, so I appreciate that.
Okay. Started off with a bang.
Yeah. You're like, what was I thinking?
Started off with something nice and relaxing. Yeah. And
this is your life.
Yeah. So, I know, it's a pleasure. No, I'm delighted to be here. Yeah, I've been kind of excited about it and, you know, nervous as well, but yeah, it's really great.
Well, that makes the both of us. Yeah, because there's a couple of aspects to even today's conversation that I know I was kind of speaking to you about, that I'm always continuing to learn, and I want to learn, and I don't want to be fearful about talking about particular topics. But yeah, I just think there's so much that we can be learning from you. So the first thing that comes to mind, even just your recovery journey, if we could even just start with that. What was it that brought you to your first step towards recovery from an eating distress? What were you experiencing at that time?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose we can be talking about this as well throughout this interview, is that I'm trans as well. So that's kind of part of my kind of experience and journey around this. And part of the reason why I mentioned that is that actually, in a way, the start of the two kind of processes, so recovering from eating distress and also transition, happened at around the same time. I think it happened first that I, you know, realized I was trans after a couple of years of kind of exploring my identity and things like that. And then, like, shortly after that, it was probably later on that, probably even the same year, I realized that, oh, okay, I might have, you know, that eating only homemade sprouts wasn't very sustainable, ironically, given that it was said to be sustainable. Yeah, I think I just had a sense that, like, okay, as well as kind of connecting to wanting to, you know, transition and be authentic in terms of that side of things, that I also wanted to, you know, learn to be comfortable with my body, with food, with that side of things too. Yeah, I suppose kind of embark on both journeys together. It was interesting, actually, because I actually went to my GP at the time and talked about both things at the same time. Yeah. And the poor fella,
I was going to say, he's thinking, it's right. Won't it be plenty now?
I know.
She might as well.
I know.
Why
exactly.
You were there? Why
you price
of
one? What happened? Oh, just another thing.
Never mind him. What was that experience like for you? Like, even going in and exploring the two things at once?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was nerve-wracking. And we can talk about this a little bit more later on, like kind of the whole experience, you know, navigating the medical system as that. But I think that there was kind of a nervousness around like say even in terms of like the eating distress at the time that I went in, I didn't quite like meet typical diagnosis criteria. So he kind of just weighed me and said, "Ah, you know, you're fine." You know, for the trans stuff, actually, he was a bit more like he did recommend me to speak to someone. I think it was in Beaumont Hospital or something like that. But it was very nerve wracking, and I think because it was almost like a sense of like this was actually quite a big thing in both journeys. Actually, it was like, am I enough to actually be able to get help for these things?
Yeah,
do you know the way? Like, I know that can be quite common for people with eating distress. Even it's like, am I sick enough, or am I sick in the right way, or am I well fit into this in order to be able to access the help I need?
Yeah.
And I think that can also be very true in terms of like, say, transitioning as well. Just that kind of, so kind of nerve wracking, but it was a start at least, you know, it's kind of getting the ball rolling.
That's fascinating. As you said, there's, and one of the main reasons I think about even the privilege of speaking to you today and about even the perspective of the two journeys of like recovery and transition and kind of work in parallel is that, and as I said, we might go into a little bit more, and I want to ask you maybe a couple of more specific questions around this, but there's so much talk nowadays, I think, more so about trans people than to trans people. And like, again, there's such a level of fear. Now, this might be a bit, I don't know, but when you were speaking, I thought, Jesus, it's easier to go and like, just listen to you speaking, you know, being even referred, like even kind of speaking about starting a transition and kind of going, okay, you were maybe heard and listened to and referred to Beaumont. The eating distress part, don't know if you're fitting in with this part. Like, I'm thinking, hang on, like there's so much fear around like, Jesus, someone just has a thoughts and then all of a sudden they're either transitioning to, you know, whatever gender, whereas actually to even acknowledge the challenge of, okay, I was weighed, I wasn't meeting the criteria, like to even just kind of, I don't know, that just kind of really stopped me in my tracks for a minute of like acknowledging both of like how there's still so much work to be done to even I suppose respond and give people the right care when it comes to even eating distress as well.
Absolutely. No, it's so interesting because I think it was really interesting because I think there's some of the same challenges in both journeys. Luckily for my kind of recovery, I kind of, you know, started searching out for some groups and, you know, found the Marina Therapy Center, and I found that really helpful because it wasn't like, you know, it's just like everyone was welcome. It was just, look, if you want to learn and if you want to grow, that's enough, you know, you can be there and you can access that. So that was really helpful. And I did find that, it was just really, really good to have that kind of openness and access to kind of getting the help that you need. In some ways, I think I'm almost glad that it was that way, you know, because again, it gives you kind of more choice and agency in your own recovery. Being able to access that versus having to kind of maybe fit into certain criteria, you know, in order to access help. But I know that isn't something that maybe everyone can, you know, afford or have the ability to do, you know. Which is, it's interesting also in terms of like the whole trans healthcare side. But it's interesting that thing about like fear and, you know, I mean, I suppose my thoughts on it in some ways are that like oftentimes when things are new to society, and not that like trans people are new, but I think, you know, awareness of it, certainly in you know, in Ireland is kind of newer. I think in certain traditional cultures like in India or in Native Americans or Hawaii, you know, that there were kind of names for it, for people with those identities. But I mean, to a certain extent, I think a certain amount of fear around new things is understandable. You know, I think I had a lot of that myself as well, and had certain kind of prejudices. And it is really interesting that actually I think this is getting better, but for a lot of people, they only might know one or two trans people, you know, or not even any, you know, to talk to. So I think it is, you know, something that, but we're not that scary, we're a little scary. It's not that bad.
Depends what day. I mean, you say barely about 1% of the population, isn't it? Or like,
Stats,
I'm not mad on stats, but as you said, like, for such, but you're taking up a serious amount of the conversation. I mean, we've gone from massively suppressed to as you said, like even like new, and Jesus, like the fact that you would actually have to factor that into your identity of being like almost, this sounds more like a something as opposed to a someone. Like, as you said, this kind of something new. And you mentioned earlier on talking about like your identity, and obviously so much of recovery. Now, this is maybe, and I'm kind of interested on your kind of view on it, but like that's what so much of freedom from eating distress is all about. It is the who am I, you know, and, you know, talking about even identity. And what was coming to mind when you've been speaking about that is that the role your body was or is playing within your identity. I mean, yes, when it comes to eating distress, the food and the body stuff is, you know, it's relatively one of the smaller areas, but obviously where something is manifesting. I'm kind of curious, like, what was going on for you with the extra factors at play, you know, as a trans woman? What were your thinking? What were your thoughts or feelings or experiences about your body at that time?
Yeah. No, it's a really good question. I remember actually I was chatting with Marie about this recently, and she was reminding me, like, say, when I came into my first session, just having this kind of real sense of, like, kind of hatred towards my body, feeling betrayed by it, anger, feeling uncomfortable in it. And in some ways, I think it's an interesting one because, like obviously, so the experience that a lot of trans people, say, before transitioning would have in their body, there's different ways you can put it. I mean, one way is gender dysphoria, which is actually interesting that I think the dysphoria, if you look it up in the dictionary, is distress. So it's similar to eating distress, gender distress, you know, it's just distress around your gender.
Yeah.
And that in some ways, I think that that's obviously a part of your experience, you know, that, like, discomfort in your body.
Yeah.
But that what I suppose kind of learned was that having hatred towards my body and having gender dysphoria didn't necessarily have to be the same thing. That I could be kind of, you know, have a discomfort around it and acknowledge that, but still have, I suppose, a kindness towards my body. And it's something that I still kind of work on, as you know, it's kind of an ongoing thing, just kind of loving and accepting my body. But I think it's interesting because it's, I mean, there's a nice kind of thing in Buddhism of, like, the first and the second dharma, that sometimes you have, like, a primary suffering, okay, which in that case is that, like, you know, distress around your gender and, you know, in many cases, like, wanting to change your body and, you know, having this feeling that if, you know, unless I change my body, I won't be happy within it.
Yeah.
Like, having that, but also balancing that with all the extra stuff that you're putting on top of that, like, kind of giving yourself a hard time. Or so actually that was a really a thing, I suppose. Yeah, it's, I mean, that was one thing I've written down here, like, you know, in some ways it's like learning to love your body can start at any time, and it's like you can almost hold that discomfort as well as having love and respect for your body. And that was actually something worked on a lot, say, in recovery, was trying to work with my body through that process and be a friend to it. And
I mean, even like you mentioned there, and like a sense of almost like, I'm changing one of the words, but like holding the tension there, or like holdingness, like there's a sense of like, okay, acknowledging, as I said, even the distress and the dysphoria around gender there, but also actually having the capacity to practice compassion and kindness. Because what was coming to mind there is that, like, you know, is it a case, you know, listening to you speak in there, okay, I can actually do a lot of work on the relationship with my, I don't know, there's a sense of meeting yourself at where you're at, and a sense of, like, I mean, radical acceptance in terms of, like, for now, because I'm kind of thinking, is it a case of, like, I will not feel free or feel, you know, content or comfortable with my body unless or until, you know, even like full transition in the medical side of it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to what's your kind of stance on that? What is your opinion on that? Is it, because I'm just kind of thinking, maybe even somebody listening, like, is it, like you said there, I'll be happy when?
Yeah. It's a really interesting thing. I mean, I suppose I'll start by saying that actually for me, I was really glad that I did both in parallel. And
okay.
I think for me, that's what kind of, like, I suppose both journeys really supported each other.
Yeah.
I think in some ways it doesn't, like, either or probably isn't, or for me, I don't think would have worked. Like I said, I don't think it would have worked if I had just focused on recovery and being like, okay, once I fully recovered, then I'll transition and then that'll be fine.
Yeah.
And similarly, I think if I'd done it the other way, firstly, it takes a bit of time.
Yeah.
So whilst one is waiting, one might as well make oneself as comfortable as can be.
How long is one waiting? So you're not just walking in there like we're all afraid, saying, like,
know,
look,
just
I just had a thought over the weekend.
There's like some hormone smarties that you just pop and then.
Yeah. You would think that that's the way that it actually is, the way it's often spoken about.
Yeah, you would.
So what is the reality of actually, like, you're,
Yeah, no, it's Well, so first of all, I can speak about my own experience and then I can speak about how it is now, because it's actually a bit different. So from my experience, it was kind of funny because in some ways, like when I was doing it, it was a little bit, I was trying to put this with a friend, it was a little bit more like the Wild West, and that was a little bit kind of, you kind of found your own path with it to a certain extent.
Well,
which there, honestly, there's positives to that, which I'll explain.
Okay. Yeah.
So I suppose for me, like, I mean, overall, I would say it probably took around 7 years, and again, depending on, like, from me starting, I'd say maybe 7, 8, 9 years, depending on like exactly when I kind of, probably a year of just kind of figuring things out and seeing the initial kind of psychological appointments around it.
Yeah.
I probably started hormones about 2 years in. Surgery took a fair bit longer, like that. It was probably another, I was probably 5 or 6 or even maybe 7 years, because it's kind of a more complex process. There's all the social side of things.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I was in, there's a wonderful trans peer support group in Dublin that I went to, and that was actually really, actually one of significant parts actually was getting that support. But I heard that someone did apparently do, no, but probably not every, all of them, so apparently someone did it in 7 months, which is like the record.
Wow.
That I've heard of.
That's impressive.
You'd want,
I mean,
to be
no,
like,
comparing, but like,
you'd want to be like pretty snappy about it.
Okay. So that's like, I mean, even when I was listening to you speak in their case, I was thinking, Jesus, like, you really, and I don't mean this in a patronizing way, but I was like, we really haven't got a clue often, like, of like what each individual is going through. And I think it's just even important to acknowledge that, of like recoveries and rediscoveries, and even like with the transition and like the years you're talking about there. And that's from getting it going, you know, like that's not, that's from it being initiated from the beginning. And I can only imagine the emotional turmoil maybe, but like the challenge is going with that, you know, and I just think that's just even important to acknowledge, you know, and kind of a level of empathy. And like when you're speaking, you mentioned there about kind of doing the two journeys in parallel. What impact did the recovery have on your journey transitioning?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the, like, certainly, like, so many of the tools that I learned in recovery were really, really helpful in transition. And in particular, kind of during the more difficult parts of transitioning, that really kind of just helped kind of support me to kind of stay positive through it. I mean, it's interesting. In some ways, kind of both of them can be like going through a second or even a third puberty at times, you know, in terms of getting to know yourself. In terms of, you know, even like, say, like hormonally, your body changing, you know, getting used to things, getting used to emotions. Yeah, I just think it was actually really, really supportive. It was also something that was really nice, was kind of just having a supportive community, say like the groups around, you know, the recovery groups, was really great, because it kind of, I suppose something I did was I kind of came out in stages, like in different parts of my life. Actually, another thing that recovery was really helpful in was about kind of, it's almost like kind of pacing the journey, like, you know, doing it at your own pace that you feel comfortable at, so that you can kind of absorb the changes.
Yeah.
You know? But back to the groups, like, they were really, you know, really supportive. So like, I would have kind of, you know, I remember even, say, the first time I talked about that in a group, like around that kind of stuff. And again, just everyone was very, very supportive, and it kind of just enabled me to feel more comfortable kind of stepping into myself. And also, I suppose as well, like, it is important, because there can be, it's funny, like, there can be, I think if I hadn't approached it with recovery as well, like, there can even be certain pitfalls I'm sure I would have fallen into, in terms of, like, I mean, there was a joke that a friend that I have in the UK who transitioned a bit earlier than me, but like, it was almost that, like, when you're going into some of these the medical things, it's like you have to be like a 90s 50s housewife in terms of, like, keeping up appearances, you know, walking with a slice of hot apple pie and a cup of sweet tea and all that, and
really proving
hello,
your point.
Hello sir And I think something that recovery really taught me was just about being authentic within that, and not feeling like I needed to it's almost like, in order to feel like your identity is legitimate, you can sometimes overcompensate and think like, oh, I need to be like perfect or fit even more into society's standards, beauty standards, you know, which are obviously different for, you know, kind of female presenting trans people or male presenting trans people. And I think just deconstructing all of that, those expectations around how, you know, your body should look and how you're, all of that, were also really helpful. So yeah, I think there was a lot of kind of synergies or a lot of things that really helped. I think there was some other things or kind of like tensions or kind of complexities as well of having both at the same time, you know. But I think even those were kind of resolvable, but just kind of specific.
I think what has just stopped me in my tracks, what you just said, and I actually find it really emotional. I can actually kind of feel it when you said that, like, your identity is legitimate. Like, I don't, that's really after, I need to take a bit of a minute with that. Fuck, Casey. Like, I don't know, there's something in that. My God, you know, like, my identity is legitimate. And when you spoke about, and I think, yeah, okay, as a trans woman, there's so many parts of your journey that I won't say I can't connect with. I haven't experienced it myself, okay? A deep level, obviously, of empathy with that.
You should give it a try sometime.
At least the options are there. It's nice to have a choice. But, like, I think on so many different levels, and this is a huge, like, that we can see, no matter what, where you're coming from or where you're going to, there, on some levels, we can really, many of us can identify with that you are trying to, like my identity is, like, legitimate here. And you're like, what the, like, and when you spoke about, like, to be putting human beings in these spaces and places, because it is a reflection of society as well. Like, we all have a responsibility, and like you beautifully described there, that's why it's so important to have the conversation and deconstruct ideas, you know, and conditioned ideas, and the importance of having the conversation, as opposed to us, they're not talking about trans rights again, are they? Or, like, you know, like,
as I said, I thought, like, they had them already.
Yeah, they're getting a whole month for Pride now. Like, what's the story?
And
like,
2 or 3.
Yeah. So, like, you know, and but that's when you're like, this is happening on a daily basis. That is inhuman, you know, like, that there's so much, you know, there's just something in that. And when you spoke about the groups, like, that really stood out to me about the importance of the openness there, do you know, and taking a pause on ourselves and having a personal reflection of, like, our own unconscious bias, our own judgments, and really being uncomfortably honest with ourselves of how open we are to deconstruct ideas. And I think this is important as well, what comes to mind of, like, how we think and speak about how other people are identifying.
And be
uncomfortably honest with yourself of, like, where you're at with that. Because I just think, like, I don't know, but that sentence that you said there, and that image of, and you can see, like, even with the idea of transitioning, and maybe one of the maybe pitfalls, I don't know, maybe is that from more conversations being had, that there is maybe more of this idea sometimes, you know, it just gets, the virus kind of comes in, that you have to need to fit into this idea. But, and again, what also came to mind listening to you is that how often would we think that, like, a group, an eating distress recovery group, I mean, obviously, if you have the understanding of it, would make perfect sense of why you would take so much from it. But, like, that could give you so much support in your own transition and journey. Like,
absolutely.
That this is about openness. And I think that's one of the main things of even, like, you know, speaking with you today is, like, let's start really actively, consciously looking for the connections with one another, as opposed to the disconnections.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so thank you so much for even just, like, sharing that, because that's surprised me of, like, just how that's really hit. I don't know if there's anything coming up for you there when I'm talking.
No, absolutely. I can give you a break.
Do you mind? Jesus Christ, help a girl out here, will you? Trying to keep me shit together, Casey. Thank God this is the last episode. 41 be one too many. But anyway, as you were going to say.
I mean, it's interesting, like, that thing of, like, proving is my identity legitimate? And no, it is, like, it's an emotional thing. I mean, I think it was interesting, actually, that another friend of mine, actually, and I, we both kind of actually commented that in some ways when we were through the kind of the medical pathway of it, we actually felt the sense of relief that we could just kind of relax a little bit, and that we could kind of almost just, I suppose we could kind of just relax into our identities a little bit, and we could just kind of let go into it. I mean, it's interesting, like, because I might just talk around kind of,
absolutely,
I suppose, like, kind of say my experience with the medical side of things, And actually I was saying, yeah, I've written this down a little bit more because I just want to be kind of skillful in terms of how I talk about it. Because, you know, like in some ways I did just want to start from a place of gratitude, you know, that I think, you know, we live in a time where medicine is just incredible in terms of the stuff it can do. Like it really is, it's absolutely remarkable, you know, and while certainly there would have been kind of medical options, say before, it really is just incredible what's available. And, you know, also the fact that, you know, in the most part it's available in the public system, like most of mine was kind of paid for by the taxpayers. Thank you. appreciate it. I mean, it was some of my own tax money, but still. You know, I also do think that, you know, the people I dealt with in the medical system, I have the utmost respect for anyone who works in it at the moment in particular. Like, it's such a high pressure situation. And I actually did feel very kind of, you know, respected and, you know, it was good. But yeah, at the same time, there can be this kind of, I suppose, it can even be a fear or like a concern around people around, I suppose, like making those changes medically.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of kind of the discussion, at least that I've heard in kind of the media, it's a lot around that side of things. Like, you know, say, what if people regret things? Mm-hmm. And actually it's interesting as well, the whole thing of like, say, and this is probably where one of the tensions is, where you also have an eating distress where, you know, because one could think that if you're someone who has an eating distress and you're saying, I need to get this and this medical procedure to feel happy with myself, that
here we go. Another surgery for
don't
now.
Worry, a few sessions will knock that out. And so it's just, yeah, it's kind of an interesting, and even like, I mean, I have that thing as well of like, am I confusing one for the other, you know, or like, what if I do it? I mean, what I would say on that is that I think actually in some ways, even separately from the medical side, there's actually a lot as society we can do, even just to kind of let people socially be who they are, you know, that doesn't require any, I suppose, in a way, having people have the freedom to express themselves and feel comfortable with that and, you know, be accepted in every circumstance. Is something that we can all work on, and hopefully, you know, all agree on that that's something we want. And in fairness, I actually do think, particularly in Ireland, like I think generally Irish people are very decent and accepting and, you know, like kind, and even, you know, the results of the marriage equality referendum. So I think there's a lot of hope that can be there from that side of things.
Yeah.
And a lot that can be done. But yeah, I suppose also what really helped me with that actually was actually just kind of honest communication with people, you know, like kind of talking about it, talking about why I wanted to, you know, maybe get certain procedures or start hormones. I think as well, kind of having like, it's like almost like an exploratory attitude to it. It's like, look, you know, I mean, you joke about, you know, getting an old dab of tea behind the ears, you know, just testosterone behind the ears, just like a perfume, you know.
Some perfume.
Yeah, powerful stuff.
But yeah, the attitude of like exploration and curiosity and, I suppose, there's a sense of openness. Because openness, I mean, as you mentioned earlier on, I mean, to describe it as a bit of like the Wild West when you were experiencing there is positives to it, but yeah, like it is a whole exploration. Yeah, there's a huge unknown there with both journeys.
Exactly. And actually one thing that actually was one of the first psychologists I went to see, who was a really wonderful person, said it's almost like going on a train journey where it's like you can get on at any point, but you can also get off at any point and then stop and wait. And even if you want, you can go back a bit. You can, you know, it's like you can choose the pace at which you engage with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like a lot of it is just about like trying something, seeing if it makes you feel happier, and then taking it from there, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, you can approach it kind of gradually in terms of doing it. But yeah, it is interesting in terms of kind of, because some of where that kind of, I think that thing of like, is my identity legitimate can come from, or it's like, am I trans enough, or am I, it's again, similar, kind of similar things in terms of eating distress, like it's to say, am I sick enough, or am I sick in the right way? Because you kind of have to go through at the moment these like kind of psychological assessments for a diagnosis of gender dysphoria. And in some ways, it's a bit of a tricky one to talk about now, because I suppose, I mean, it was interesting. I was at the kind of Trans Pride last weekend, actually. Mm. And what a lot of people were kind of calling for there was this idea of like informed consent around these, because in some ways, on a pragmatic scale, my attitude was often, look, I don't mind going through these assessments so long as they're reasonably efficient.
Yeah.
I don't mind talking about myself, one of my favourite topics, you know. So, you know, like having a talk with someone, a couple of hours, you know, I didn't particularly mind it. But at the same time, I think one effect I did notice it have on me is that you can have the sense of like, it's like a test and I have to pass this test in order to get what I want, you know. Particularly if it's kind of more so around, I suppose, are you or are you not trans, as opposed to are you capable of making this decision, basically. Do you know the word? Like, are you corpus mentis to do it? And, you know, in some ways, from what I've heard now, is that it can be... It's gotten in some ways like more professional, which there's good parts to that. Like it's more organized and there's more people. They've got wonderful kind of like social workers working there and a lot more support. But that the kind of assessment process has gotten more rigorous.
Yeah.
I think actually someone was saying it's like a 4-hour kind of continuous thing. And it's also there's also quite long waiting lists for people of like, you know, like again, I don't know the exact figures, but certainly years. You know, like and. Yeah, I think it's just, for me, it did create this sense of like, oh, I have to kind of, I mean, it was funny. I was actually saying, joking with this with a friend of mine, that like, in some ways, like as a trans person, you have a lot of experience of living up to gender stereotypes. So if you're going into an assessment to portray a gender stereotype, it's like, okay, well, I have a lot of practice at this.
Yeah.
So I got this.
Yeah. I'm a better person.
But it does kind of create a little bit of a sense of like, you know, having to fit into certain boxes or certain ways, you know, certain pressures. Whereas I think, now again, I don't understand like the legal or the, you know, the whole, that kind of whole side of it. But the thing I like about the kind of idea of informed consent is that it's kind of a freedom for people to self-determine, you know, to take responsibility for choices. Even if... Like say with certain surgeries, like I signed a consent form where you're told what the complications could be, and you know about that, but then it's kind of on you to make a decision around that. Yeah. You know, it's a choice, and you can choose to go ahead with that. And even, you know, say like that there were certain challenges I had out of that because I was making the decision. I felt it gave me responsibility for it.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, I think. That's something that, I guess I just see as being kind of quite helpful.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's even like there's so many complexities to it. And again, even the way you're speaking about it, it's just even a bit of an insight of like, how you're talking about like even different waiting lists. And as I said, sometimes the way the conversation is that like, there is this real kind of messaging sometimes. You're getting two sides of it. The fear mongering that we're often hearing in the media is that like, you have a thought over the weekend, you say, right, I'm going to go down to the GP and I think I'm just going to start transitioning. And then the reality of it is that you're talking about, you know, the challenges there and the years of waiting lists and the reality of it. And yes, there's improvements there. And it's just about like, as you said, just to even acknowledge that. You mentioned something earlier on there when you spoke about, there was something that caught my, you spoke about even like the challenges. And when I was talking about even, one point that you made actually, the pacing. I think there's such a crossover there with recovery. I think there's often this fear of like, as you say, what a beautiful analogy of like, you know, you can get on the train here and you can get off, like, you know, you don't have to sign up for something. And I think even with recovery, the importance of like the pace you're taking your recovery, because sometimes I think you can kind of hit the ground running with recovery because it's, you know, obviously there can sometimes be a tendency there to try and really be like the best of it and get it done. And, you know, it can be a bit of an inconvenience because you're like, right, get it out of the way. But actually, what pace, you know, am I pacing myself through this process? Yeah. And even like, you know, like for yourself, you mentioned earlier on that like there were some of the tools that you learned in recovery that really helped you navigate some of your challenges. What were some of those tools? Because I'm just thinking even for someone like listening, like what are the main takeaways that you might even practice today that you learned throughout your recovery?
So journaling was a massive one, actually. That was really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just throughout the whole process, just kind of journaling was really, really helpful. I think kind of giving time and space to emotionally process things as well was really helpful. Like, I mean, I like to do kind of the same meditation, or even, you know, just having time off, or having just kind of, I suppose, giving yourself space to emotionally process.
Yeah.
And even just kind of allow your emotions to kind of catch up with all the stuff, all the change that's going through.
Yeah.
I think particularly, again, it's different for different people. I think particularly sometimes when you're highly sensitive, it's like, you know, you almost need that kind of time to catch up.
Yeah.
That was really, really helpful. As I say, yeah, I think kind of support groups were incredibly helpful and beneficial. So both, like, kind of say the recovery groups and also kind of like, you know, say more kind of trans support groups were really, really helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think like finding those people who are kind of on your team and who can support you, which I've been very lucky that I've had a lot of really wonderful support, who can kind of, you know, just kind of help you through those like difficult periods and kind of be your, you know, your buddy. I think just kind of taking time with it. And I think as well, like trying to kind of, like giving yourself a huge amount of credit and trying to enjoy the process as well for you.
Yeah.
Like certainly finding, say, what like inspired me a lot of the time was like kind of science fiction or kind of fantasy heroes or heroines. And, you know, just kind of finding inspiration to... Yeah, like at certain points, actually, that I found that really helpful.
Anyone in particular? Now I'm curious.
I put you on the spot.
No,
you're fine.
I think that's so important. Of like, you know, even like, you know, we often talk even with the groups, like film, you know, art, and particular characters, like the important, like it's so simple, and that's why even before every group we talk about like what film you've seen or performance, that you can actually see these characteristics within, you know, people and characters, and kind of like you mightn't have it consciously there, but actually the importance, because one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because it was sent in on the Instagram, and someone was wondering about like what your biggest motivation for recovery was. And I think that's a really important point of like, you know, what are my inspirations and who are my inspirations? And like, even that like you can get it even from art, like, you know, different characters, values, ideas, and kind of like, yeah, that's just something I'm being called to the certain attributes here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, actually I have thought of,
so,
I mean, so some of the things actually that I find really Lord of the Rings for me is a very wonderful inspiration, like just so many different parts of it, very, very wholesome
and
very lovely, a lot of the characters in that. One thing I have really appreciated recently, and I think this has happened a lot more, is a kind of like more positive stories around kind of trans people are being told by trans people, say in the media. Like there's some really positive portrayals, like say in Sense8, or there's one called Pose, which is amazing as well, like where it's kind of people, I suppose it's us telling our own stories, which is really powerful and inspirational. So I think that kind of is the motivation of community and kind of connecting with people. And I think a real motivation for me personally as well was that it is possible to learn to kind of love and accept my body, love and accept myself. And to a certain extent, I think that's like an ongoing thing, you know, like it's an ongoing thing. But I think that is kind of a real motivation for me, that idea that, you know, it's possible to be, you know, at peace with your body, to be at peace with yourself, and to I mean, it's kind of it's almost a cliche, but I think, you know, the idea of like, hopefully it's like that by us doing this, it'll make it a little bit easier for other people to kind of go through it as well. Do you know, like I think that what's it, Maud Flanders, when somebody please think of the children, you know.
But like, I mean, that there's so much in that, like, because even kind of come back to what you were saying, you know, like what was helpful, like first of all, when you said the journal, and the first thing that just came to mind was like, boring, but actually like, but it's so
pen
true.
And paper, like,
you're like, but you hear these things, you're like, no, I'm just not into that. But like, you know, but you mentioned there about time, you know, giving yourself space and time to process change. That, again, it's like, you need to keep repeating these points that like this stuff actually works, because listening to you speak and like coming on one of the last points you made there, this is possible, you know, but the tools are only as powerful as they're like how you're applying them, you know, that's absolutely. really. And again, you mentioned the group, you know, and connection, and it just kind of comes back of like, that's like the whole, again, like listening to you speaking and having you on today, of like looking for these connections, how important it is that, like, okay, I don't have the experience of a trans woman, but like there's so much I can take and have taken and learning and listening to you and looking for these connections. Like, so when you're listening, absolutely. Like that is so, so important of like, what am I taking from this as opposed to like, well, I'm hardly going to click onto that, am I? Do you know? And even I think so beautifully what you mentioned, like, I don't know if we're, maybe it's the circles I'm missing in, but I feel like we're maybe losing that a little bit, but maybe it's like within your community that's becoming so much stronger. The point of actually, yeah, somebody please think of the children, like that, like being the change you want to see, that like, okay, this isn't ideal what we're experiencing here, but my God, like, you know, if we do this today, if I do this today, and I think that was actually something you mentioned earlier on about even societal change. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it came up to my mind where it was like, you know, even allowing one another to be open. Like, again, we need to be pushing ourselves to our edges here and being uncomfortably honest with ourselves of how accepting and comfortable we are with, like, even the, like, our own parts of ourselves. Because I think that's like, what am I doing personally here? Because, you know, oh, like, well, I'm judging myself here, I'm judging my size, but like, I wouldn't judge Casey, like, you know, and you kind of like, it doesn't actually work that way. It's very challenging to, you know, if we want more of that openness, we do need to actually practice it. So like, I just am blown away sometimes how I feel like that, like, just to reiterate that point, that there's so much change you can bring about by just kind of like looking at yourself individually at the at the time, you know, or like where you're at. I don't know if anything comes up for you when I'm saying that there. I think even, as you said there, like the just the connection across the board there, the importance of it. But I just, it's just, again, those simple tools of, I think, just the connection, the space. And as you're speaking about even like with change, you mentioned at the beginning the idea of identity. You know, and I think, as I said, one of the biggest questions with recovery is who am I? And that can be a really daunting question, but then it can get to be a quite exciting question. I said, actually learning to enjoy the process. Where are you at with that identity now? Like, how would you describe the relationship with both yourself and your body today?
You know, it's funny because, like, I think it's one of kind of like learning and exploring, because I think it's actually that I'm still figuring out a lot of that stuff, you know, and just kind of, you know, kind of seeing what I like in terms of certain things. And yeah, I suppose just trying to kind of let all options be available, and then just kind of seeing what I get drawn towards. You know, like, there's definitely certain things in terms of my personality that I, you know, I do know of and that I'm kind of aware of. But I think a lot of it's actually just about, almost kind of giving myself permission to kind of slow down and just trust that I'll kind of find that out and exploring it. It is interesting because I did go through, I'd say, even earlier periods in kind of the recovery process of, like really like kind of feeling like a teenager, where a lot of kind of stuff was coming up and, you know, a lot of emotions and different things. And I've actually found that's been happening again now, and but I think what's good about it is I can kind of see that for what it is, and you know, to a certain extent, just kind of let it happen and let it be there. Like, I mean, a lot of that question around identity for me is, particularly at the moment, is just kind of giving myself the freedom to explore and just to be kind of, I suppose just to be comfortable with kind of, with myself. And, you know, like, I would know that there's kind of certain sides of myself like that, and kind of, you know, highly sensitive, and the kind of the more nerdy side, or the kind of slightly campy humor, bad pun side that is also very important to me. And, you know, kind of to say the spiritual side as well. But yeah, like, I think it is nice in that I kind of have a bit more of a sense of like time and space to kind of explore that, which is great. Also be moving into a different phase of life of, like, you know, just kind of exploring all of that. And
listening to you speak, and the word explore, you know, keeps coming up. And I just think, even again, I just always think, you know, like the words that we even choose to use, the impact they can even have on our body, and just even to verbalize the word explore. There's no sense of urgency when I'm listening to you or even just sitting with you, you know, that to really embrace the exploration of different phases of our life, of our recovery, the phases of change, yeah. Whether that be, you know, entering something new, gaining something new, losing something, you know, like, as you said, change is coming up in all different shapes and sizes. And it's like, okay, you know, if I'm exploring this, I'm seeing what's kind of coming up for me. I just think I feel like a little wave of water almost with that, you know, and listening to you speaking as well, just a sense of like trust there. You've invested so much into your recovery, you know, time and energy and everything that goes with it. I'm thinking of somebody listening to this and kind of going, oh, I'm kind of tempted to come off the train here, or I don't know if I'm into this, or maybe at the beginning of their journey of recovery. Like, is it, what are the biggest benefits, or like, what have you, what are the main things that stand out to you that you've actually taken from the recovery journey? Like, is it
probably some of the main things that I've gotten from the from it would be, I think, yeah, I mean, there's that phrase, you know, there's nothing wrong with you and there never was. It's a really big one, because I think it often just, it's amazing, like, you know, how deeply ingrained that can be, that sense of not feeling good enough or feeling different or feeling, you know, like an alien. I mean, that was actually something I felt a lot when I was younger. You know, it's like you almost just feel like you're an alien species, you know, yeah. That like no one else can relate to your experience.
Yeah.
But I think just learning that, in a way that like there's nothing wrong with you. You're just kind of like a human being who's imperfect and, you know, makes mistakes. I mean, it's an interesting thing. It's a question I often ask myself, like, say, when I was doing anything, like, say, like going to, like, say, the groups or doing journaling and all of that. It's like, is this helping it, you know, do I feel better after this, basically, you know, yeah. is this helping me to feel lighter, you know, freer, and I think for me that always was the case. I mean, also I suppose the thing is that you can you can also take breaks and then see if you miss it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a very lovely, like, yeah. Yeah,
you know what? And like, not to give yourself a hard time either.
But yeah.
Like, okay, actually, you know what?
Yeah.
Sometimes you need that to...
Totally.
And also to feel like it's your choice as well, that it's not like...
100%. No, I think that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, that like... Yeah, like... Yeah, definitely. I won't even spoil that. I have one more question for you before absolutely. I let you go, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
I feel like there's a lot of tension around the conversation with trans people.
Yeah.
And absolutely. As I mentioned before, I think we do more talking about trans people than to trans people. But as you said, even, you know, okay, there, yeah. Anyway, what do you feel? Because I'm kind of thinking, I was saying to you, even as an ally, right? Or that word, or someone who wants to support the community, you know, how, if I'm in a conversation and it feels like I'm feeling tension around it, what do you feel like is needed, either like on an individual level or on a societal level? What do you feel like we need at the moment to help ease the tensions around the conversation? I don't even know if I'm going to call it a debate with trans people from your point of view at the moment.
No, absolutely. Well, thanks for saving the easiest question.
Yeah. As you said, right? I mean, anyone can come in here and talk about recovery and eating distress, all right?
No,
I'm just
perfect.
Using you for the juicy bits, all right? Forget about those boring
really
bits.
One. Exactly. No, it's a juicy question. No, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's really interesting what you say about talking about trans people.
Yeah.
And too, because I think actually that's probably one of the main things, is actually just to try and like have trans people involved in the discussions, do you know? Like, because I think sometimes, like, it's interesting, the idea of fear, you know, because I think that does kind of come up a lot around it. And, you know, fear, false evidence appearing real. And sometimes it's like the idea of something in a way, like if you actually have the experience of talking to someone who has that experience, I suppose just give context and just, you know, kind of see more the humanity of the situation. And I mean, okay, we might be a little scary at times, you know, let's be honest. But, yeah. You know, I think Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, some of the tensions that do seem to be there. There was a really interesting thing actually that they were talking about in the Trans Pride last weekend, where, and I've heard this as well before, is that sometimes these issues can be used as polarizing topics.
Totally.
To distract from the real issues.
100%.
Like, it's almost the definition of scapegoating is you find a marginalized group, or you find a group, and then it's like, you know, they're the problem. You
yeah.
know?
Quick, look over
the
there.
Trans group, they're stealing all your cookies or whatever, you know, like.
Especially the ones with ED.
You hear that enough. I know.
But sorry if you hear that enough. Too fair? Not fair enough.
Not fair enough, exactly. Yeah, like in some ways, it's very, I mean, I think that this is kind of in a broader level. It's very easy as humans to get polarized into self and other, you know, into groups. Like
yeah.
that there's this, that there's my group, and then that there's that other group.
Yeah.
And it's often because I do that as well myself so much. It's so easy to slip into it, them and, you know, them and us. But I think oftentimes what that can be born out of, say, for myself, is when I'm afraid. It's like I have, there's something I'm afraid of in terms of my own needs not being met, or something being taken away from me.
Yeah.
Around the gender stuff, that can even be that, you know, maybe that there's like a security in having certain kind of an idea that gender is a fixed way. And because in some ways, actually, I feel that, you know, for me, like my identity is kind of probably fairly binary. I wouldn't say 100%, but fairly so. But even for, you know, my non-binary siblings and people I know, it can be even harder for them in terms of, it's just challenging. It's like we have an idea of how the world is, that it's black and white. It's, you know, or even, you know, binary, it's ones and zeros. Whereas actually there's a lot more colour and kind of diversity in it, just in terms of reducing the tensions. I mean, I do kind of, it sounds a little, I do kind of have, or try and remind myself to have trust and faith that through having conversations that those things are solved, you know, that, and I think in particular from, like, actually knowing people, and also I think just understanding that, look, like, I know, say, certainly for my own loved ones and things like that, who are all incredibly supportive, it can sometimes be an adjustment, or it can take a bit of time to.
Yeah.
So I think even just as a society, there's a certain sense of just having a sense of patience and, you know, kindness towards each other. Yeah, I definitely think, as well, like, I mean, we were joking about this in the chat we had before, that, like, in some ways I think a lot of what trans people are just asking for is just the right to have agency in their own lives.
Yeah.
You know, the way that it's kind of okay if people think it's a bit of a stupid decision, like, in some ways, you know, like, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, in the way that, you know, I might see some people doing certain things and you're like, geez, well, fair play to you, that's a bit mad.
Wouldn't
not
be for
not
me.
My cup of tea.
Yeah.
But,
fair play
off
to you.
Go. Whatever you're having yourself.
Yeah.
You know? So I think, you know, and in fairness, I think that's what a lot of, like, you know, see, even my friends who, it's like, look, as long as you're not hurting anybody, like, and the other thing is that, like, it, just because, you know, you maybe let trans people self-identify, it doesn't make us, like, immune to the law or things like that.
Yeah.
If you're afraid that, like,
don't give them too much power, you know.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there is societal structures in place, and
it's like you're almost trying to convince people that, like, you'll be safe if you just let us
yeah,
be.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
We promise, but we just
exactly.
And yeah.
I think it's like really that thing of, like, you know, and it's a very core thing in recovery as well. Am I acting out of fear or love? And that's just, I think, a lot of it is, you know, like.
Yeah.
Just trying to kind of be aware of the fear. Sometimes even I can find it's like, you know, for myself, it's almost just trying to find out what's underneath it. Like, what do I need? Like, do I need security? Do I need to feel like I understand the world, that I understand people, or that the people I'm interacting with are okay, you know, like that sort of thing. Actually, give it 10 years. It'd be grand, I hope.
Yeah. Please, God.
Please, God.
Or whoever you're praying to.
Yeah, exactly.
Casey. Thank you so much for joining me today. I think I'm just so grateful for it.
Oh, thank you.
Your time, your energy. Thank you for thinking of the children also.
Yes,
okay, we're all benefit from that. But in all seriousness, I just continue to learn from listening to you, and yeah, I'm just very grateful to have you here today, and I cannot thank you enough for your time and energy and what you've shared. And yeah, I just think the main word that even kind of comes to mind that you're speaking about is just that exploration. And I just continue to be excited for you and your next phase and that exploration. Oh,
thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.
No, it's a pleasure, because actually I it's funny, I've really found these incredibly helpful listening to it, you know, and particularly the found it very helpful and inspiring. So yeah, keep the good work. Well, as in, thank you as well for doing it. Sorry.
No pressure,
take a bit of time. Jesus.
Sorry. The same is directed towards yourself. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate that, because I never know who's listening, but I'm delighted with that. It's like, it's funny though, isn't it? You're listening.
I'm sure all five of your listeners.
Yeah. You and the four others.
Yeah, I are going to be riveted.
An absolute privilege. And I'm wishing you all the best for the next phase.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Before you go and rate, review and subscribe the podcast, accepting 5 stars only, This is the last episode of the 5th season and will be the last episode for a while. So I just want to take the opportunity to genuinely say thank you so much for listening. Thank you for coming back to each episode. And I really appreciate messages and when you get in contact to say of like what you're taking from the podcast and how you're applying it. The whole purpose of the podcast is just to really show how much we can do in between our sessions, whether you're attending sessions, but there's just so much personal work that we can do. And I really hope that these podcasts have been useful. They're here anytime that you want to freshen up on a topic, polish up on some tips and tools that you have been applying. And hopefully I will be back chatting to you sooner rather than later.